Hey. Welcome to 8x8, 8 acts, 8 minutes. We got stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, literature, music, art. If you can wrap it up in 8 minutes, we'll consider it. 8x8 is a production of You, Me, Them, Everybody, DC and Chicago podcasts, live shows, sheer madness. YouMeThemEverybody.com is the web address. It's also would not be possible without the Hungry Brain. Dan is my favorite bartender anywhere, anytime. Please give it up for him. Drink hard, tip well, and if you're curious about the game, I believe he knows what's going on. Last time I checked, Atlanta was getting beat like a rented mule, so I think that the Bulls are doing okay. But if you need to know, Dan is the man to ask. We are taping the show tonight, so you can laugh, you can shut the fuck up, or you can decamp to our smoking patio in the back, which it's a nice night, so why not? You could chat about life and philosophy and whatever else there. As long as you let everyone in here enjoy the show in here. My name's Emerson. I'm the host this evening. I grew up in the middle of meth country, which introduced me to comedy at a young age. It was mostly slapstick. I did not see a Woody Allen film until I was 17, but I had seen a guy fall off the back of a truck, and I knew three dudes that went to jail for stealing SUVs and burying them 6 feet underground. Which is the most labor-intensive crime that I've ever heard of. I think the only reason they did it is all they really wanted were the SUVs. But they knew a guy with a backhoe, and they were too fucking wired to sleep. But it's tough all over, folks. This is exciting. I just heard about this yesterday, and I'm really psyched to see the Metro Mix tomorrow. If you know what that is. I know that you don't hear that sentence very much, but check it out. Metro Mix is apparently doing a piece about comedy open mics in Chicago. And they're going to tell you which ones are good, which ones are bad. And the theory behind this is that going to an open mic is like going to a showcase for free. Which, I don't know what the rest of the piece is going to be like, but I'll bet you anything it's going to be one of those retarded, like, here's how to have fun on a budget kinds of things. Like, the empire is not really crumbling if we've still got dollar draft night. Which, I don't know if you've seen a lot of open mics, it's not like a showcase. It's like a really short band part. And if you're not, you don't do open mics and you just like going, that's fine, but don't encourage other people to do it. It's basically don't order the swordfish, we've got dumpstered apples, because we're recessionistas. Why pay for sex when you can fuck a watermelon for free? Age of austerity. What else is in the news? I believe, it may be tough, but I believe in this. If a man can live in the mountains in the middle of fucking nowhere on dialysis as the most wanted criminal in the world for 10 years, you can achieve your goals. Whatever you feel like doing. For instance, I got a job recently, finally. Thank you. I've been unemployed for a long time, and I got a part-time job, so now I'm underemployed. From the shithouse to the mezzanine is how I like to think of it. I was the only applicant for the job whose LinkedIn profile said that I'm specifically not results-oriented. I under-promise and under-deliver. It's how I differentiate. And my job is in marketing, but my real job is embezzled. The thing to keep in mind when things get tough is it can always be worse, and really, I'm only happy by contrast. Like, no matter how bad it gets, I like to think that I could be 5 years old, starving to death in Sierra Leone, getting my hands cut off for stealing rocks. Because I can't experience the highest highs unless I know that someone else out there is experiencing the lowest lows. Tonight is very special, 8x8. This is the podcast edition of this show. And some of you might say, I've heard about this. What is a podcast? Well, basically a podcast is like a radio show for your computer. But instead of pulling a signal out of the air or listening to a stream in real time, you download a gigantic MP3 file. And you listen to it at your leisure. If you like it, you can subscribe to the show and get more of them. And eventually they'll accumulate and destroy your life. We have 8 podcasters on the show tonight. Originally, for the interest of diversity, we were going to try to get some Zoomcasters, but that didn't work out. The first gentleman that we're going to see, we're lucky to have him, folks. He does the Winners and Losers podcast, which you can check out by going to winnersandlosersshow.com. Mr. Hank Thompson.
Thank you very much. Hey, everybody. How's it going? Feeling good? A podcast is a bored asshole with too much time on his hands who wants other people to listen to how bored he is on the internet. That's what my show is all about. So please subscribe. Please tune in. As you can see by looking at me, my father was German and my mother was bald. She's from Baltistan, you know. It's one of those old Soviet countries somewhere. Their main exports are razors and sadness. And moms. I'm 31 years old. I can feel myself getting older. For instance, I'm having a really hard time throwing away jars. You know, like, I just can't, like, they're still, you know, they're still useful. Like, I just can't throw away something that has a purpose. It's, you know, like, they used to hold mayonnaise and pickles, and they can hold screws or buttons or smaller jars. I mean, like, the possibilities are endless with jars, you know? You know what I'm talking about? So, that's what I've been up to lately. Rockstar lifestyle. I'm thinking about signing up with the Big Brother program. Seems like it'd be really nice if some creep took me out for ice cream. Okay. Yeah. Taught me how to be a man. Be nice. I recently broke up with a girl, so I'm single again. I'm trying to get back in shape, lose some weight, start banging strangers. You've been making some bad eating choices when you go to Taco Bell and the woman says, "See you tomorrow." So, embarrassing. That happened to me. I was like, she was being sarcastic. I was drunk. I couldn't tell. But, you know, why would you say that to me? Like, how dare you? How dare you say it to me? I'm a valuable customer. So, you know what I did the next day? Went to the other Taco Bell. Yeah. You gotta be smarter than these people. Fucking bitch. I wasn't mad about that. It was a long time ago. You know, it's a pretty clear sign that you need to make some changes in your diet when you order a pizza and it shows up and the first place you look for your red pepper flakes is your nightstand. And it's there. Pretty sad. What you said. I drive a lot for my job. I'm on the highways. I see people texting. I've done it myself. This is very dangerous. Anybody here texting in their cars? Yeah, I know. Thank you for admitting it. Everybody's done it. It is a problem. It's not safe. I figured out a solution. What we need to do is pass a law that says that whatever you're texting at the moment you get yourself killed has to go on your gravestone. Just whatever dumb shit you thought was so important has to be etched into granite for eternity. You know, like, you're going to see a bunch of gravestones that say, be home soon. Snuck into Thor, LOL. I'd love to see a gravestone that says, yes, I will marry you. That'd be nice. Why did that one take so long to figure out? She deserves to die. You don't respond with a text to a wedding proposal. You're supposed to break up over text, not get engaged. Come on. That's why I did it. Wow. I guess I just lost you there with that one. That's okay. Anybody watch The Bachelor? Yeah? No? Surprisingly, wow, I didn't expect that. I assumed you'd all be into it. No, I don't watch a lot of TV, but like, that show's terrible. It's the worst show on TV. There's been, I think, one marriage that's still going on after all those seasons. But I did discover something about The Bachelor. If you watch it in reverse, it's the happiest story a man can ever hear. Okay? If you watch the whole season in reverse. All right, follow along. It starts out with a woman gives a guy a really expensive ring. Then he goes for a couple helicopter rides. Then he has the most amazing orgy you can imagine. And then they all leave. Beautiful. Love that. So what if they're all walking backwards? It's not so weird. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of kids got beat by their dads when they were little, you know, with sticks and belts. Not me. My dad beat me with this. My mom's fist dildo. You know, you get a lot of action on that thing. He would bleach it. He wasn't a bad father. Yeah. No, that's not true, obviously. I will tell you a quick story about my dad. This will be the last thing I do. My dad and I, we drove out to Iowa for a family reunion. And well, a better term would be a funeral. And because, you know, that's how we party. Like, hey, one less sandwich to buy. Let's have a party. And, you know, we go out there, and we're going to the wake. We get there kind of early. Wake, by the way. That's the word we're using for this event. We got 500,000 words to pick from, and we chose wake for that. You know. It's a little more accurate, but, you know, sleep would work. Long nap. But, you know, funerals are uncomfortable. These things, like, nobody really knows how to behave. You know, emotions are all over the place. And, like, I deal with being uncomfortable by just being a wise ass, cracking jokes. I got a good reaction off this one I'm going to share with you guys. We were standing there talking to this old lady, and she goes, did you boys go to the casino last night? And I go, yeah, but they threw me out. She goes, oh, why? And I go, because I took the craps table literally. Not bad. You know, I'm just riffing. You know, it's middle America. It works. It's okay. I'm not putting it in my act or anything. It's okay. Keep there. And, like, she didn't, you know, she didn't get it. She's like, nah, she didn't get it all. But my dad, standing right next to me, my dad just, like, blows up in laughter, just loses his crap. And like, he, you know, his eyes tear up a little bit, his face turned red, he was embarrassed. It was a nice little moment, actually, to be honest. So some time goes by, and now my dad decides that he wants to hear the joke again. And we're standing around talking to some other people, and my dad, now that we're a comedy duo, he's trying to set me up to say the joke again, but he doesn't know how to do that. My dad just leans in to the people we're talking with and just goes, Hank got thrown out of the casino last night. He took a shit on the craps table. So, that story. Hey guys, my name is Hank Thompson. Thank you so much. Please listen to the lovely horse back on my stage.
Thanks, Hank. One of these days you're going to tell that yes, I will marry you text joke in a room where it's actually happened to someone. And that's when you're going to need the craps table bit. All right, up next is a guy who's, I don't really know what to call him. I would call him an artist, but I think he's already been beaten up enough. He's a writer, performer, all-around entertainer. You can find his stuff at woodsugars.com, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jeff Phillips.
All right, I'm going to read to you all a little short story. I wrote this a little while back before all the shit happened in Japan, so I thought I'd bring it out of the closet. A little piece called Nagasaki Lagoon. The conference has a very different vibe than the one I attended 2 years ago. The biannual thing to keep the international pharmaceutical machine in motion. I got it good with my brother. He's the chemist. I'm the businessman. We usually attend together. This year his wife is preggers and the timing was bad. She's about to pop, finalizing the organic mesh of a lover's equation. Steve nailed it. Boy, tell me to settle down and I'll shove a pin in you to shut you up. He nailed it. 4 years in the making and we solidify a compound for an original painkiller. Healthy. Hits the brain and certain isotopes that act like an H-bomb. Like a virus to produce an expansive blast of deep endorphin flow. This is a drug for people hurting bad. If it's mild pain, keep to your aspirin. The body creates a healthy rush of endorphins. No mimicking done here. Trickery, yes, but there's trickery in nature. And each man is apt to trick himself with white lies. It doesn't hurt, he says. I'll be okay. He's barely wheezing, it's so bombastic, yet knock him with morphine and he loses his mind for a time. Slowly becomes addicted to not trickery, but displacement. Now Steve nailed it. Ease your pain, obliterate your pain, stay lucid, but soothed. He fucking nailed it. As I said, the conference has a very different vibe than the one I attended 2 years ago. First of all, hardly anyone is here. Shit, I came to sell this chemical compound so my bro and me can get rich off science. And where are the buyers? I don't blame anyone for not attending. The only reason I showed up to it as is, well, is because I flew all this goddamn way to Nagasaki to stay in the same hotel as the conference, and so I'm here. A hotel in Japanese symbols that I can't read, and it was a pain in the ass to get to the hotel. Jeez, fucking whole city is flooded. Fucking all of Nagasaki must have the worst fucking karma. 60-some-odd years ago, they all get blasted, and now their sewer system overflows on them? I don't kid, their septic sanitation system just dropped the fucking H-ball all over them. I vomited thrice over the edge of the fishing boat that brought me from the airport. First floor of the hotel is all wet with broken brown mush that stinks. Luckily, the conference is supposed to be on the fifth floor, banquet hall, to begin with. Luckily, my room is on the 17th floor, but it still stinks, massively ripping at my olfactory glands. All my life, I've been told I have a sharp proboscis. Maybe because I'm a Jew, but I'm always sniffing stuff out. In college, I could smell marijuana a mile away and know where to find it. And give me a line of coke, and I ain't numbed. I'll sniff around and find us some more coke. But those days are over. I'm a classy drug dealer now. I sell legit chemical recipes concocted by my bro to legit pharmaceutical companies looking for the next big pill to be the big boom in business. Why is cancer so profitable to these companies? The pain. The pain needs to be cut. But I ain't gonna sell this stuff because I stopped by an empty conference room because everyone on this aisle, our target market, knew about the grotesque little flood well before I did because I was on a fucking plane. And now I think how unsurprising all this is. I mean, Japan decides to redo their entire power grid and plumbing works. In one momentary snap and dip in the electrical pulse sends the plumbing out of whack and fries out the motherboard. When they reboot, the pumps start sending everything backwards. Then the power goes. Then the power comes back on and goes and flips back. Meanwhile, the motherboard continually refreshes and keeps sending the same signal to pump, only it's pumping backwards, and now a city's feces, piss, and old bathwater came back to haunt and laugh at their forward progress. The hotel pool on the rooftop deck is untainted, yet a small crowd of people gather to drink from it. They fight and yell at each other in Japanese. I don't understand a word of it, but it sounds nasty. No way am I going to drink up chlorine. So I ration, secretly and slowly, my bottle of Poland Springs from the Philadelphia airport, the one good thing that shitty airport has done for me. I try to howl it in my room, and then I hear the door churn, like the slide of a key card, and the door starts open, and I think, Jesus fucking Christ, they double booked this room. Big fucking mistake. I was just about to masturbate, and now the door is opening. Get your shit together, peoples. In come four Japanese men in gas masks, tan suits, and sporting pistols. They point them at me. I put my hands up. One of them pushes me on the bed. Another shoots at my briefcase. It pops open. They rummage through the portable DVD player and screen where I would have showed the demo of the drug workings with micro-documentary detailing the rat research and CAT scans to show the tremendous potential of our concoction. They toss this to the side and pull out my manila envelope, which goddamn contains the secret formula. They turn to me and shoot the wall just above my head, which is smart on their part because I was just about to throw a hissy fit. They leave the room and these documents, and there goes our fucking fortune, and the stink of the secret street below seems to grow more pungent. I wait a few moments and decide that I am brave. I'm going to charge them down. They're fucking with small business. I run to the door, open it ferociously, and I see standing right out in front of my door, pointing pistol at me, one of the gas mask men. He hisses that I'm not going anywhere. I halt, turn back, and slam the door. I am trapped. It is dark. The sewage level seems to have risen outside, covering now up to the third floor. This is clearly a sick disaster, and I think how lucky the residents of this town were back in World War II, just to be obliterated in the flash of that atom bomb. Now this awful stench permeates and seems to break windows from foul wafts alone. Raging boaters bound down the streets, which now serve as rancid rivers, splashing gross shit in their wake to douse fourth and fifth floor windows, and shouts from these windows. If that were my apartment, I would consider my life ruined, but here I am, trapped in a hotel room in a foreign country, guarded now by gun-wielding men with tiny, cold eyes. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Meal ticket has been yanked. All of the world's pharmaceutical companies seem to have merged with the larger progression of Japanese medicine, and there is absolutely nothing I can do now. Our compound's recipe is now in their hands, and when our grant money ran dry, the research was fed by my credit card, which I will not be able to pay back unless I can retrieve that envelope. So actually, my life is ruined. I continue to gag at the stench as it seems to grow worse. The streets continue to fill with sewage, and it's only a matter of time that my windows burst, and in comes the tidal wave of simmering ass residue from weeks ago. Some Nagasaki's man's mud butt river that I wish nothing to do with. I attempt to cry. Maybe that will ease my anxiety, but I'm too anxious to cry. I rummage through my briefcase to make use of the sample vial of these pills, but the thieves seem to have taken that as well. I look out at the people in my room, and that fascist asshole is still outside my door. I'm done with this. I yield the letter opener from my briefcase, thinking I might stab myself with it, just push it into my chest and rip it across my heart. That is the best option. I decide to throw one last hissy fit, you know, to get all the anger out, so when I die, maybe my soul will be at peace, so I don't have to linger in this shithole as a ghost with unfinished business. I jab the letter opener against the bed and hear the slight puncture and hiss of air. I stop and assess. Air mattress? I rip the sheets off the bed and find that it indeed is an air mattress. I seem to have stabbed open one of the compartments. There goes the same shape-giving air. That is just one compartment, just one compartment. The rest is still in shape and full-bodied. Hope fills me up suddenly, and for a second I am distracted by the thoughts I'm having that this cheap hotel, this cheap piece of shit, to stock each of these rooms with this massive hotel structure with air mattresses. What happened to the real deal? But then again, I realize how efficient and two, this might be my salvation. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Jeff Phillips.
Yeah.
Ah, the wily Jews. Will nothing get past them? You fuck with small business, you bring down the Hebrew hammer. Up next, she does a podcast called Chicago Open Mic, which is chicagoopenmic.podbean.com. She does a bunch of other stuff as well. We're lucky to have her, ladies and gentlemen, Maggie Edney.
Goddamn right you're lucky. How we doing, Hungry Brain? How we doing? We here?
Yeah.
Present. You got people talking on microphones. Tell you what, I'm kind of a contemplative person, and I was thinking about something recently that, and you seem like smart people, so maybe you can help me out. If your father is from Ghana, and your mother is from Korea, I don't know. I think you might have some very exotic features, you know, like pretty eyes or something. Another thing I was thinking about, you know, I gotta figure my life out. I gotta get this shit straightened out, obviously. Like, look at me, for Christ's sake. So I finally decided what I want to be when I grow up, and it was really exciting, and I'm gonna tell you about it, if that's okay. I'm gonna be Freddie Mercury. And yeah, once I become him, you know, first step is practice safe sex. Let's face that. That's number one thing to do when you're Freddie Mercury. And while I'm practicing my safe sex, I'm going to fuck dudes in my power stance. Yeah, give me that fat bottom, girl. I'm going to call my male partners girl. That's the other part of that. So as I'm Freddie, I'm going to go ahead and start producing bands. So I'll produce an all-girls band, you know, like a band comprised completely of bassists. Mediocre bassists. That'd be awesome. I only want to do that because I have very, like, little female influence in my life. Most of my friends are guys. And it was real apparent to me one night at work. One of my female coworkers had just gotten a facial, and she loved it. And then all the girls start gathering around discussing how much they love facials, and they're exfoliating and great, and I just stand on the sidelines, having never received a facial. You know. I've dodged a couple, but I've never actually got the hit with that, so I'm dodging facials, failing relationships, you know. I came out of a failed relationship, because that's what you do when they fail. You don't continue them, right? It's over. And I was sad. I was sad that it ended, because we got to this point where we were farting in front of each other, which, it's just nice. It's comfortable. You're not holding it in all the time. It's nice. But not just in front of each other. Like, one night we were spooning, and I was the big spoon. And I don't know what he ate that night. I don't know, but he farted something crazy. That I felt it. And not just like on the top of my thighs. It actually went like between my legs and out the other side. This man's fart. And I reacted. I was like, whoa! And he goes, oh my god, did I scare you? And I said, no, that's just the weirdest sensation I've ever experienced. And I think I love you. So. Nice. We already kind of together long enough to start to get a little experimental here and there. But here's the thing. If you watch, guys, like, are we all pretty normal people? Sort of?
Yeah.
On the border, at least. You watch a porn, and, like, you don't consider the fact that those people are professional fuckers. You'll be like, oh, hey, honey, let's try that. But it's like, no. These people know what they're doing, and they make it look good, and they can bend in all sorts of weird directions. And then if you try anything, you don't consider the physical mechanics that you might require to pull anything off. And it was the simplest thing. It was come on your tits. It was the simplest thing. And when the time came, when we were trying this out, it's come on your tits, I had it kind of locked in with my own two legs. And so the time came, and we panicked. And I didn't do anything to help him. He was like, I'm going to come. I'm like, okay, here they are. And he just, like, hopped over my legs and then scooched up my torso. And I'm just watching this, like, awkward white dude, like, rubbing his butt on my torso like he's a dog on a carpet. And he didn't even make it And then that was the end. Like, that's the last thing I saw, and the sex was over, and anything I might have enjoyed before then was gone. The last thing I saw was someone scooching up my torso. Never scooch during sex, you guys. This is what we learned. And also, when you want to try shit, discuss it first. You don't just, like, in the heat of the moment be like, let's go crazy! Like, no, talk about it first. You're going to fall off the bed. You're going to hurt yourself. And that's it. And that, like I said, that relationship didn't last. It's too bad. It's not that bad dating me. I don't think, like... It's not that bad. Because, well, one thing is that, guys, I don't enjoy receiving cunnilingus, and I know that's weird to some people, but it's not the physical sensation. I get that loud and clear. My problem is I'm, like, so neurotic that I just know that if I look down when it's occurring, I'm just going to see, like, two eyes and a nose just, like, peering at me from between my legs, like, hopefully... kind of creepy, like he's sticking up on me or something. Like, I'll get you! Like, Kilroy, what are you doing down there? That's so weird. Really not that into that. So yeah, if you don't want to involve a dick with me, guys, later, if we chat, alright? No cuddling, but I'm totally cool with finger banging. Like, that's fine. Because, like, first of all, it's a little rough. You know, like, finger bang, ah, like, that's cool. You can tell I'm a real excitement in the bedroom. Finger bang, ah, that's what you get. But also, the terminology itself, finger bang, that's hilarious. So finger bang, and if I don't come out of it bruised and giggling, then I really see no reason to sleep with you. So just keep that in mind. Guys, all right. I'll tell you one last thing, believe it or not, after all of those... fun tales. People used to put their children in my care. I was a dance teacher for very little kids, ballet. These are 3 and 4 year olds. And what you do when you're a 3 or 4 year old in a ballet class, you wear tights and then a full torso leotard. And thing is, you're not quite all the way into potty trained yet. Like, it's still iffy and you still need help going. So part of the dance teacher's job is to help with the potty. And this is what this entails, is you take this child that doesn't belong to you, bring them into an enclosed room and shut the door, then you proceed to peel their clothes off for them, and then they prop their little naked bodies up on a toilet seat and, like, talk to you while they're peeing. And the only thing is, like, I always found myself in this position just feeling awkward and, like, looking at the ceiling thinking, I never had a background check. I'm going to leave you guys on that. Thanks a lot. And Megan.
Back in the late 90s, I played in a lot of bands, and I'm not sure, but I can almost swear that we opened for the band of all-girl bassists. I think the name of the band was Finger Bang. Oh, folks, this is exciting. We've got coming up our first team effort of the night. One of these gentlemen will look eerily familiar. You can find out more about them at woodsugars.com. Wood Sugars.
Well, hello, everybody. Hi. My name is Bosco Dunwitty Rodriguez, and I've come a long, long way to entertain all of you. Now it would dill my pickle if I could show all of you my freak circus. That's right, I'm a filthy carny and I've traveled a long, long way. In fact, I outran Memphis flooding. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be showing you some of freak shows. If you'd be so kindly to give me nickels, and here I would thank you wisely. Ladies and gentlemen, my first freak I'm going to introduce to y'all is the TMI IT guy.
All right, show him this thing. See? Yeah, you're right. You're Hewlett Packard. virus. But that's not the only thing in this office with HPV.
Back, go! What did I say? Wow, now that was pretty exciting, wasn't it, everybody? You all seem like the word-playing type of crowd. This is going to be a lot of fun. Now remember, I came a long, long way to entertain you all. The next freak I'm going to bring up is actually a gaggle of freaks. It's the self-esteem-powered party bus. Hey, why isn't this bus fucking moving? I want to go to Barleycorn Brunch and grind out a hot dude.
Well, this here bus is powered by self-esteem.
Well, then fucking shovel some more steam and let's go.
Move to the rear.
Oh, okay. Oh, right here. Back! Back! Back, all of you freaks! If y'all were lukewarm about that one, you're gonna be even more indifferent of this next one. Ladies and gentlemen, I came a long, long way just to show you the freak, the lipstick thespian.
Romeo! Romeo! When the fuck am I gonna get to play Romeo?
Shakespeare in Love, so if you didn't see that film, you wouldn't get that joke. Ladies and gentlemen, the next freak I'm going to show you is a woman, a real-life female we've captured and brought all around this country. This woman suffers from a rare disease called sickle cell bulimia. DeAndre! Yeah. Wait, Jimmy, why'd you stop? I was so close to the finish line.
We all know, Danica, that you never finish first.
Back! Back! This next one, all of you better put on your thinking caps. Please enjoy this freak, the passive-aggressive panic attack.
You know, Bonnie, that's weird that you would shut down on me now that I finally got a date. But, okay, Bonnie, I'm just going to play along and lay on the ground in public and piss myself. And probably shit myself. But I'm not going to enjoy it.
Back, you passive-aggressive freak! Back! You remind me of a mother. Well, this show is almost over. Ladies and gentlemen, two more freaks that I'm sure you're all going to be afraid of. This next freak... not actually a freak, but a scenario. It's called Whites Only Laundromat.
Hello?
Oh, no. Whites Only Laundromat.
But he's a Mexican.
Filipino man. Whites Only Laundromat.
I just want to wash me knickers and take them home and hang them.
No colored knickers. Whites Only.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bid you all adieu before one more freak that is dastardly. Get out your YouTube phones. You're going to want to film this. It is Jess Chess, the edgy Hispanic Catholic comic. Hello!
Thank you! Thank you! It's good to be in Roscoe Village! Earlier today, I was in Wicker Park! I'm the edgy... just remember my name for this setup! I was in Wicker Park! And I ran into a lot of vegan, atheist, hipster chicks! Did you know these people? I don't get these vegan, atheist, hipster chicks! It's like... wait for it, please! It's like they won't eat scrambled eggs and bacon, but they'll scramble their eggs while a baby's baking. Tough room. Should have went with plan B. Miscarried. Abort this joke. Thank the joke!
Travel up to Poughkeepsie. I would like to bring out my freaks, Mr. Jeffrey Phillips and Elias Rodriguez. Ladies and gentlemen, we are Wood Shooters, and we thank you very kindly.
That's what it's all about, folks. So much work play. We are halfway through 8x8 this evening. As I mentioned, 8x8 is a production of The Hungry Brain and You, Me, Them, Everybody, a multimedia conglomerate that does podcasts, live shows, music, other madness. YouMeThemEverybody.com, DC, Chicago. Check it out. We're having fun tonight.
Full swing!
Thank you. What was the final?
95-83. Yeah.
That's a pretty serious shellacking. So. That's a. it wasn't as serious a shellacking as was going on earlier, but still 12 points. That's.
They were down with 10 minutes left.
They were down with 10 minutes left, and they came back in the clutch. We are gonna have fun regardless. Of you pessimists. I mean, Chicago sports fans, bunch of masochists. Like, if you want to have fun, you should check out a Southside bar during a Sox game. Ideally, you should go once when they win, because no one cares. Then go again when they lose. The place just lights up with people just losing their shit about how angry they are at the Sox. And it's fucking amazing. We all get depressed sometimes. A couple of weeks ago, I was so depressed that I considered becoming retarded. Which is weird, because I'm not really an emotional person. I was thinking about it the other day, and I realized that in the last 10 years, I really have never cried unless I was drunk, which is probably because drinking causes me to reflect. But so I cry when I'm drunk sometimes, and when that happens, I usually find someone else who's already crying and bum tears from that person. Moving along. Our next entertainer, folks, is a published author. He also does a podcast like everyone else that you've seen this evening. It's called This Podcast Will Change Your Life. He's at bentanzer.blogspot.com. Ben Tanzer.
Yeah.
Short sucks too. Okay. This is a piece called Daddy Dreariest. It's from a humor collection I have coming out this summer called This American Life. Alright. I should also stop drinking so much when I skip dinner, but that's another topic for another podcast. No one sets out to ruin their child's life. Things happen. Bad decisions are made. We always want the best for our children, however. They should be happy and successful, though maybe not as successful as we are. That said, I love my son Scotty very much, and I want to say this publicly here in this full-page ad I've placed in Variety. I'm writing today to defend myself against the accusations laid out in Scotty's memoir, Daddy Dreariest. And I've decided that a point-by-point refutation of some of the many troubling assertions cited within the narrative is the right course of action. I write this with love, of course, and I do so with the belief that one day this action will lead us to reconcile. I also do this with the hope that one of my old friends in the business will read this message and look to option it. Because I believe it's a great story for the right guy in need of a little mid-career resurrection. Think of it as Kafka's letter to his father meets Good Will Hunting. And please picture Bruce Willis in the lead. It will be brilliant. Now, on to the book. On page 7, you write that I slept with your third grade teacher, causing you and our family untold embarrassment and trauma. First, let's talk semantics. I never slept at your teacher's house. Nor did she sleep at ours. There was no sleeping. Now, did two lonely people, one of whom was smoking hot, come together after said hottie may or may not have pursued the vulnerable and lonely parent of a pathologically difficult student and future memoirist after a late-night parent-teacher conference and approximately 22 shots of tequila? Maybe. But it didn't mean anything to said parent, nor should it to said child. It was never intended to happen in public, in broad daylight, or during the time period when students were dropped off at school. It also wasn't that good. And again, to be clear, there was no sleeping. On page 21, you describe why I chose to dress you like a girl until you were 7 years old. To start, you should blame your mother for this. I know she's no longer here to defend herself, but I don't think it's inappropriate to say that you can safely blame her for any and all problems you have with me or your upbringing. Now, it's true that we dressed you as a girl. It's also true that from birth, you seem, shall we say, a little effete to me. But there are a number of important reasons for her decision to dress you as we did. One, times were different then. It was the early 1990s. And I cannot begin to explain how liberated we all felt in terms of bending the rules and fighting convention. I also cannot explain why we smoked so much crack. but we did. And we got ideas. And I am sorry. Second, Ernest Hemingway's parents dressed him as a little girl. And look how well that turned out. Have you read As I Lay Dying? It's genius. A fucking masterpiece. And you cannot deny the connection there. Finally, I knew I wasn't going to be around to raise you. But I still wanted you to grow up as a man. We could have named you Sue. But that would have been so cliche. Meanwhile, I ask you to think about the fist fight we had just last month outside your book signing in Santa Monica. Do you think you could have beat me to within an inch of my life if we hadn't done what we did? Fuck no. And no need to thank me. On page 97, you state that I killed your mother. Do you mean that literally or figuratively? I would remind you that I was cleared of that suspicious fire in 1995, the cut brake line in her car in 1999, and most importantly, the alleged arsenic thing in 2002. People like your mother are born under a dark cloud, and you cannot deny that something like that is genetic and has nothing to do with me. Bad things happen to all of us, though, and when they do, we have to buck up and move on. I know I've tried to, and I will do so again despite these heinous allegations. Now, you might be looking to imply that I somehow contributed to your mother's death in a more psychic or even spiritual manner, and that's more complicated. Can one's years of rampant adultery, drug abuse, narcissism, prison stays, insecurities, paranoia, and jealousy contribute to the death of their significant other's soul? Sure. But does the fact that all these examples apply to me mean I'm guilty of what you're suggesting? No, I don't think so. I've thought about it. I feel okay with my behavior, and so the answer is no. Next. On page 134, you say that you've always wanted to believe that your real father was a prince. I take this to mean some hero type who is prepared to ride in on a proverbial white horse and save you from a universe gone wrong, correct? I also assume that you feel that I never filled that role. Let's be clear, though. While I know that this is a metaphor, and that your likely father is not a prince, that doesn't mean he might not be the artist formerly known as Prince. Or Willie Stargell. Or even former Vice President Walter Mondale. I wouldn't go so far as to say that your mother and I were on a break when she became pregnant with you, or even that we had an open marriage. But I would say that your mom was kind of a whore. Now, I know that if she were a man, and there were many times I fantasized that she was, she might have been celebrated for her endless series of extramarital bedroom conquests. I also know that this is a double standard, and it isn't right. But the fact is, she wasn't a man. And so what she did was whorish by any definition. I know that's hard to hear. But I'm sorry. Society determines these kind of labels, not you or me. Now you know the truth. Let's call a spade a spade. And I hope that doesn't offend anyone. On page 200, you say that I forced you to become a child performer, live out my dreams, and support the family. I think this is a loaded statement. Can anyone truly make anyone else do anything they don't want to do? And yes, I say this recognizing your age and size at the time, as well as my unpredictable bursts of rage. Still, for the sake of argument, let's say a father could force his son to do something he didn't want to do. You can't tell me that despite the manic behavior, the forced smiles, and the desperate cries for help, you didn't seem happy then. You write that you were crying inside, that you were high all the time, and that you only had Harvey Weinstein to confide in. Yet, while all that might be true, you never said anything. You write that you didn't feel you could say anything due to the intense pressure you felt as a 7-year-old supporting a family of 11. And to that I say yes, there was a lot of pressure. but everyone needed to pull their weight. We had to eat, didn't we? Where did all the money go, you ask? And is it true that I blew much of it on alcohol, limos, hookers, and high-end hotels? Possibly. But I was your manager, and I did what I thought I had to do. Do you think roles in American Pie for the next generation grow on trees? Where is the rest of the money? It's hard to know exactly. But I wish you could ask your mom. Because to be honest, she was a fucking thief. Ask anyone. Ultimately, of course, this all boils down to your most malicious assertion and the overriding theme of your book, that I wasn't there for you. Something I think is very tricky to prove. Are we talking literally not for there for you, a la Cats in the Cradle? Physically not there for you? Or figuratively, a la the great Santini, emotionally not there for you? Either way, I guess I feel bad about this. I blame society, of course, for creating an image of fatherhood that no one can live up to. And I blame myself. A little. I know I made mistakes. I always had a weakness for redheads. And maybe if your mom had died or... I hope that was a redhead. I always had a weakness for redheads. And maybe if your mom had dyed her hair red like I asked, well, who knows? To be honest, though, I mostly blame you and your unrealistic expectations, mopey looks, and endless haranguing. Parents have lives, too. And I never felt you accepted that. If you could have, maybe we might have reached some kind of understanding, found some happiness in the little moments, and moved on, making the need for a 14-year-old to write such a book unnecessary. So look, I am sorry about the injunction I requested. But hey, call me, please. We'll do lunch at Nate Nell's. It'll be like the old days. We'll nosh. We'll laugh. And we'll talk about the role of the father in that new movie you're attached to. Because I gotta tell you, I think I'd be perfect for it.
Representing a podcast called Red Bar Radio at redbarradio.com, which was apparently attacked by 4chan. And this actually happened. So this is what podcasting success looks like, folks. Very funny man. He's rocked 8x8 in the past. I'm sure it's about to happen again. James Fritz.
I'm actually just a co-host. One more time for Emerson, everyone.
One other time for Barack Obama! Now, I don't care where you fall on the political spectrum, you have to give it up for Barack Obama, because he did something that George Bush couldn't do for 7 fucking years. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, I see you and I raise you, W. I will torture active U.S. military soldiers. How's it feel, liberal scum who voted for him? Ha ha ha, cry in the park. No, but I voted for him too, but that was just out of white guilt, I swear to God. It's ridiculous. We're torturing Bradley Manning. We're torturing a guy named Bradley. That's the white. We're torturing guys that white now. That sounds like the name of the point guard in the movie Hoosiers. Like, can we name him Abdul? Can we call him Abdul? Because when I tuck my kids in at night and pray over them, it would just make me feel better. Bradley, man, he sounds like a nice guy. That's my woman character from the South, a.k.a. my mother. She doesn't know who he is. She thinks it's someone I went to high school with. Yeah. So what did you think about the kids celebrating the murder? I mean, I'm happy he's dead. I mean, don't get me, I'm not a Bin Laden fan. But, like, it was weird. People were like, oh, how did you feel seeing all the kids celebrate in the streets, you know, like, fucking outside of D.C.? And it's like, well, I don't like seeing young people that happy for any reason. Like, you know, it's off-putting to me. I'm like, oh, fuck you. I look at that and I just see, like, oh, you're a bunch of, like, spoiled cunts who are just going to grow up and quit smoking and be the asshole that's coughing outside when I'm smoking a cigarette outside. Can you? Oh, God. It's a, Those are the worst people in the world, by the way. You know what I mean? Those are the worst people. I'm only smoking outside because you made me smoke out here. I used to be able to smoke inside like a person, and now I'm outside, and now you have the balls to do the hand wave and the fake fucking cough in 2011. It's not the 90s. We have bigger problems than Chumbawamba now. We are in like three endless fucking wars, and you're like, oh, this is what I take a stand for, smoking laws. Yeah, were you at the rallies? Were you at the, no, you weren't. You're just pushing your triple wide stroller by me that costs more than my first fucking car in Logan fucking Square while you fucking, oh, my son Chad, I'm sure he's developing allergy right now. He's on his Bose surround sound child baby's first headset. But like, can you walk 15 feet away from me at all times? Can I have a bubble around my white life that is never affected by the outside world? You know what's really bad for your lungs? Fucking rubble, burning rubble. You think anyone in Afghanistan lights up a cigarette and people walk by outside them and are like, can you put that out? Oh no, I know it's a burned down building and my leg's on fire, but can you not smoke around me? Thanks so much. I'm sorry I said cunt, I was referring to a man in that scenario, so don't get all, cunt is gender neutral to me because it is a choice. I got in trouble for saying cunt once. I was watching, smoking weed and watching CNN on mute because that's how I like to party. And there was this 22-year-old girl from Evanston, this white girl from Evanston, like, who was over at the apartment. I don't know, well, because we had weed, that's why she was there. But so she was there, and like some Republican senator came on TV, and I was like, oh, look at this fucking cunt. And she just went like that record scratch. She was just like, what did you say? What did you just say? I was like, I called the man a cunt. And she was like, that is just as offensive as saying the N-word to a black person. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Because, no, we all remember, like, growing up, reading our history books, how we as a people forced boatloads of cunts here against their will and segregated them. Remember cunt-only drinking fountains? Remember how that was a thing? Yeah, that was a thing. Hey, cunt, sit on the back of the bus. Which is ironic because I usually stand up at the front of the bus and talk to the bus driver the whole time. But we don't spoil brat fucking country, myself included. I'm a product of this. It hit me during the Bin Laden murder party coverage that, like, it was a sweet party. But, like, it hit me when some guy just came on TV, and I'd never thought about it before. A reporter came on TV and was like, live from Ground Zero. And we just know what that means. We have one Ground Zero. Pretty lucky as a people when you think about it. That's how young this country is. I'd love to go over to fucking Palestine and be like, yeah, can you point me to Ground Zero? Like, which, well, there's one like 3 blocks away, north, 2 miles that way. Oh, you're standing on one right now. It's where I lost my children. Would you like to buy a knick-knack? This is what we talk about on the podcast. Not really, we just talk about farts. But this is what I have to do in my stand-up. I don't know, maybe I'm depressed. Do I sound depressed?
No.
Ha! What do I sound? Full of life with my man tits and my beer gut? 33. I just turned 33 on Easter, on Christ. I turned Christ's age on his, well, I guess it's not his death, but Christ's death year on Easter Sunday. I get the irony. I'm here to lead you people. But I can't push over the tiniest rock. I'm so feeble. I think I am depressed. I hate when people say they're clinically depressed, because then I feel like you're just bragging that you can fucking afford a therapist. Get out of my fucking face. I'm free clinically depressed. Have you? In there? Quite depressing. And my only goal tonight is not to pass out on a city bus again on a weeknight. did that a couple Mondays ago. Passed out on a Chicago Ave bus headed west around 4 in the morning, coming from an open mic, drunk and like, just cradling my McDonald's in my seat, because you're my reward for not killing myself tonight. I'm going to eat you up when I get home. I'm going off the dollar menu, because I'm worth it. I made 5 strangers laugh. And then, so, like, I'm on the bus, and I pass the fuck out, cradling,
holding on to my fucking bag like a cerebral palsy Emmett Smith, like someone is gonna come and try to swipe it out of my hands and everyone on the bus is gonna scrum for it. No, they don't want my sad meat reward. But so I pass out, take it all the way to fucking west, very west, and that's a great way to wake up, by the way. I recommend that, just being on a bus and woken up by the bus driver at the end of the line, because they don't wait, it's not a B&B. It's not part of their... Not in their job description to be a gentle waker-upper. They just smack you in the head and give you a look like, come on, white boy. You had every shot in life and you're doing this. Like, that's kind of what's implied. And then, and that's not the bad part. The worst part is when you have to walk from the bus you're on to the correction bus to take you back to your home that you can't take yourself to as an adult. And it's like a 15-minute walk. And that's the longest walk of shame you will ever take in your fucking life. I would rather walk home in front of my parents the day after Halloween after fucking the ugliest thing that ever lived in my costume for 2 miles than walk that 15 feet again. It's at 5:30 in the fuck morning. Are you kidding me? And now people are going to work. It's now Tuesday morning. A new day is dawning for America. And I am just on the back of the bus just hacking up the night before just, and this sweet old black lady gets on the bus and hears me hacking away, still cradling my meat, because I'm going to put you in a microwave and re-fry these dreams, baby. And so she gets up and walks over to me and hands me a lozenge and goes, there you go, son. Feel better. And the level of white guilt I felt in that moment cannot be measured by man. I'm from the South, too. Like, it's all my fault. My white guilt's so bad, I couldn't even go to Obama's website when he was running for president because it was mybarack.com, and I was like, that's a little slaving. You're not my Barack. You're your Barack. You're free now. Go be a corporate warmonger just like all the rest. We're equal. We're all equal. If you're rich. I'll end on a happier story. I was in Boys Town a couple weeks ago. I'm not gay or anything there. That was a joke. I'm bi. But I'm not. Oh wait, this is going out to people in the world. I'm straight as they come. C-U-M. And no, but I was in Boys Town doing a show. A comedy show. Not a
shower.
What? What'd you say?
Oh, like a shower show. Like you dance and they pour water on you and it's like sexy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You can just say shower show. No, I love boys. I love gay dudes. Like, who else is going to give me coke and call me pretty? A woman hasn't done that in 10 fucking years. So bring it on. I'm a bear. I'm cool with it. But so anyway, I was doing a show. The show got out. And like I went outside. It was like 1 a.m. on a Sunday. And the cops were out in crazy full force. Like, I'd never really seen in Boys Town, I guess because black people started hanging out there. But, like, the cops were out in full force and, like, double barrel down both lanes, like, just shining lights on megaphones, trying to clear the streets. No one was fucking moving. And as I was walking to the bus stop, I realized why. Because I walked by Spin, and I swear to God, a cop over the megaphone in Boys Town, trying to get people to disperse, honestly said, "Move it. You've got to move it." Swear to fucking God. And like the doors were open to the bar, so there was like that in the background. He's like, "Move it. You've got to move it." And people were just dancing more. It was like people were like in the streets, like the party hit another level. The DJ took over a cop car. There's lights everywhere. So God bless America. Thanks, everyone.
James Fritz, you can check him out at redbarradio.com. That's about it. Thanks for coming out to 8x8, 8 acts in 8 minutes. There's going to be some weird secret 8x8 in 2 weeks that I'm not going to be at because I'm going to be in Miami, but they're doing one behind my back, and you should check that out. Renee Schultz is going to be hosting. She's awesome. So that's... not this coming Tuesday, but the one after that. And we're going to wrap up the show with the music of Baron Von Something, who I know James Fritz has a CD for sale. Ben Tanzer has a book, and I believe the Baron has merch as well, which you can ask all of them about after the show, because people need money. Ladies and gentlemen, Baron Von Something.
Thank you. Hello. We in? So this was a lot of fun. I'm glad that Brandon asked me to be part of this. Thanks for hosting. And I've never performed with authors and comedians and sketch groups, so this is a little strange, but I'm glad to do it nonetheless. This is a song called Tucson, Arizona, and it goes like this. Don't you know you're the biggest little death in my story? I don't want to know when you're coming. I don't want to know where we're going to. Hey! Little villain, please pray for me. Will you hold on to the dying breaths in my story? I will hang on and hold this burden, but I don't want to know where we're going to. Hey! There's a girl on the phone from Tucson, Arizona, said her daddy's car doesn't work. Up. It's called the Coach House Sounds Podcast. We just started releasing material on iTunes. I think it's on iTunes now. If you're interested, I've got an email list, and I've got homemade cookies, and I'll give you one if you sign up for my email list. They're clean. This song is about a woman named Mary, and everything in the story actually happened in the song. It's about a woman who wears a surgical mask in public, and I'm not sure why. And the song is called The Surgical Mask.
Mary wears a mask on her face, usually reserved for airports and hospital stays. When I arrived at 4 o'clock, Linda was already there, sifting through a plastic. plastic box beside a green sliding chair. When Mary came in, her eyes like leeches, she said a cold hello. No exchanges, no prior speeches. Happy far as I know, Mary.
Again, my name is Matt Barron, and check out the Coach Out Sounds podcast. Thanks to all the performers. I had a lot of fun, and I haven't laughed that much in a while, so that was really fun.
I can die happy, calm with no phone. Sleep without money, lavish alone. Last time I went to see her, inadequate cover, branches barely stirred, her buzz was a blur. Silence, you were thinking, then whisper, God speaks through sounds of the river. If we willingly wear the lightest smile living, we won't lament our lives by the water.
Thanks, that's it. Yeah.
Music of Baron Von Something. He's at baronvonsomething.com. He's on MySpace and Facebook.
What's your next show?
Oh, it's Subterranean, May 18th.
Subterranean, May 18th. Check him out. Thanks for coming. Thanks to Dan for running the bar.
Yeah.
Thanks to Esmeralda for doing all the work. Thanks. Thanks to Hank Thompson, Jeff Phillips, and the rest of the guys in Wood Sugars, Maggie Edney, published author Ben Tanzer, Junior Stopka, James Fritz, and thanks most of all to you for coming out and making it this far. YouMeetThemEverybody.com. My name's Emerson Dameron. Thanks. That's it. If you feel generous, we do live off of donations, so please help us out.